Welcome, BattleTech fans, to the Renegade HPG podcast. This is Travis, and today I am joined by the creative team behind Hired Steel from TMC Studios. We have in the top right, Constantin Corman. My bottom left here is Bernard Engstler. And on the right, bottom right there is Christian Gerner. So gentlemen, we're going to be just kind of picking your brain and what exactly goes behind creating this little awesome fan machinima. And so people out there can kind of appreciate the work that goes behind. And for those that love to kind of get a little dig behind the scenes, you know, see, how the sausage is made, this episode is for you. So thanks, gentlemen, for joining me. And yeah, Constantin, you can start because, you're kind of the head of the creative team here. The release, how's it been going so far? I know that, it's weird and kind of getting those release dates out and getting the views and getting eyeballs out. But, last I checked, we're up to 26,000 in 2 days, which is a nice little boost there. And YouTube's always funny for how it's sharing and where it's sharing.
Yeah. So regarding the release, it's actually going quite well. I posted a short statistic about this in our Discord channel. I think we only reached 25,000 viewers after 4 days with episode one. And now it's not even after 2 days. So it's going quite well. And it's on a faster trajectory than episode one is, which is always very nice. More than double the amount of people watch the premiere live, which is also always cool. So in general, yeah, success.
Definitely. I always found YouTube, it takes them like 48 to 72 hours to catch something that's good. And then they start sharing it. And it's frustrating because, the views seem to be directly tied to the shares, in terms of when things go big. And so, it's just about kind of hammering the algorithm and waiting for it to hit. And then of course, every once in a while, like 8 months later, suddenly everyone will start watching like the BattleTech cartoon again. And I'm like, I guess YouTube is sharing this again. So
we get these spikes.
So everyone listening, if you liked it, you enjoyed it. If you shared on your social media, if everyone's sharing, eventually it kind of, YouTube takes a hint and does their job. But it's been a while since our last conversation. So this was a long time in the making. Your team, I believe, has grown a lot since then. Tell me a little bit about kind of the timeline and who's been involved, both from, carryover from the earlier episodes and what kind of new team members we have here.
Yeah, I mean, so the TMC has always been this like core team with like me and Charlie and then Andreas and then after the pilot also Bernard, who we picked up in some Blender forum. and then we got lots of help from outside. So Christian is with us here today. He did most of the modeling for all the vehicles. You can see all the tanks, all the hover tanks and stuff. And then since episode one, we obviously got more help with grading and also with like the FX animation. So we actually got some people from the States now and from Canada who are willing to help us out and to actually do this like professionally. So this is all also very nice. So the team has grown a lot. Obviously, like altogether, it's like 16 people, but not all of them have continuously worked on the episode for 11 months. So it's like in and out for most of them. And basically for the past few months, it's just been Bernard and me powering through. that's how it went.
Well, Christian, it seems like you came at the right time because vehicles are definitely prominent in this this episode. And so you kind of, best supporting cast member there in terms of the creative team. What's that been like kind of joining the guys here and, what kind of led you to find them in the first place and kind of get connected with the project?
I think Charlie contacted me. I did some release stuff before. Nothing special, a Shrek or a Hetzer, stuff like this. And he asked me, we are working on a video project and we need a scout car. Could you do it? I say, okay, a Packrat. Packrat. I think it should have been a Packrat. Mm. This became the Muskrat. This must have been in 2019, okay. I guess. And in the following year, the Hovercraft cam became part of the project and the tank and the transport. And last year, only the APC was added. So, and it's just a concept. really to get into life, to look like they did. That was Constantine's work with the texturing.
And how long is it? What's the timeline? What's the process like for getting one of those models, you know, developed, rendered into the system?
Now, first is the idea, and I'm really picky when it comes to ideas. Behind every thing is the idea: how should it work? What should it done? Where is the crew situated? Are they fitting into this tank? Has the tank ammunition? How's the ammunition loaded and all this stuff? It lasts some time. Sometimes I have a good idea and I'm blasting through this and I'm finished after 1 week, sometimes 2 weeks, 3 weeks. In bad cases, several months.
Oh boy. Now, were you familiar with the BattleTech MechWar universe before finding the team here, or not?
BattleTech, I think I started BattleTech in 1995. So yes.
Excellent. Old school. Yeah, I think I was like 91, 92 when I was like 10 or 11. So it's been a while. Though I took a big break in the middle there. Yeah. So Bernard, you're coming back onto the group. Last time you were working a lot with the characters. Is that kind of where your focus was this round too?
Well, this time it's been animation of basically everything. So mainly animation, but also some general 3D stuff, some materials, lighting, camera setup, animatic. I did the animatic after Constantine sketched out the storyboard. But yeah, main focus was animation of all kinds. And this time we also had more characters than last time. You've probably noticed last time was definitely just guys in cockpits, but now we have some infantry running around. So that was quite a lot of work and an additional change.
Yeah.
Quite challenging, but nice to have some extra challenges that regard.
Yeah. Adds a little human element to what's going on there. It's nice to see. But the texturing, I like how there's just elements are really folding well in from one episode to the next. You know, certainly the pirate base, you know, we had a good kind of aerial shot of that last time to kind of see it up close, you know, to see all the kind of work. I know in our last directors kind of behind the scenes, Constantine, you had talked about just how much detail went into building that, even though it wasn't necessarily highlighted details. So it must have been good to finally be able to show off that work, you know, by kind of actually going into that location and see what was happening there.
Yeah, so the base the base actually caused quite a bit of headaches for us first in production, because I think I estimated like 2 or 3 weeks for the whole thing, and I ended up working on it for like 3 months, I guess. Mm. Of course, a big part of why this episode took so long is because I moved in the middle. Like, I'm not in my old apartment anymore. I moved to a completely different part of Germany with a new job and stuff. So lots of things that happened in between. But the base, yeah, it ended up being so big and just heavy in terms of asset density, and like the file was like 5 gigabytes large and stuff. And when we appended it into our rendering scenes, it basically crashed every single graphics cards except the biggest 3090 that Bernard has with like 24 gigabytes of VRAM. So I actually got a 3080 Ti with with like 12 gigabytes of VRAM, and it ended up just completely crashing and throwing up bugs and stuff. And that asset was definitely too detailed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good pitch for helping these guys out on Patreon so they can afford to upgrade all that equipment for you guys. I can't imagine the amount of electricity you guys are burning through to render this stuff. So
yeah.
Especially now that energy prices go up through the roof. And
The energy prices in Germany and Austria have been hiking like crazy. I mean, we were always the country with the highest prices by far, but now it's like it's over 30 cents per kilowatt hour. It's like five times as much as you pay in the States. And these graphics cards sometimes take up to 400 watts per hour, and they've been rendering nonstop for the past few weeks. So yeah, that's hardcore.
Definitely. Now, you had mentioned that you were able to bring on, and Bernard mentioned doing a little bit of kind of animatics and storyboarding this time. You know, tell to me a little bit about kind of that aspect and how that's kind of helped you guys with the creative process and production.
Yeah, I mean, regarding the storyboard, actually now in the process of episode 2, we got someone on board who can actually draw. Because none of us can draw, and he does this professionally, like comic drawing and stuff. So the drawings that you see in the end of credits that are scrolling down, those were like done by him for the last few scenes that were in production, because he only came on then. But he's now doing a full like drawn storyboard for episode 3. And the storyboard for episode 2 was done by me in 3D. So I basically went in and staged all the actors, and like since we already had all the mechs rigged, I imported them into my files and kind of staged them and created some cameras and stuff. And when that was done, I basically handed it over to Bernard, who then created a full moving animatic from this. So you can talk about that, I guess.
Yeah, the animatic is quite vital to get a sense for timing of each shot and how they work together, because it's one thing to see that as a still, and then especially for fast-paced shots like at the end with the chaff and the action going on with the tanks, timing is essential, and also basis for the music, which is composed it's tailor-made for our short, and it also served as a good basis, as it was done in 3D for several animations late in the process. So not everything had to be done on from scratch, and that saved some time. But also, I went a little bit too much into the detail for the purpose of an animatic, and probably I could cut some corners for episode 3. And as Konstantin mentioned, now we have a really talented guy on board doing the storyboard and also basic animation in 2D, which look awesome, and was a really great help for some later shots. The action with the tanks, he was sketching out and even animating them. And so the animatic really plays an essential part in the production process, I'd say, for planning and pacing and all the music.
The music, that's a part that I wanted to highlight, because we have to work in parallel all the time. So if we don't get the music in before we start animating, we risk that it doesn't add up afterwards. Right. So what these big budget movies actually do is they get a placeholder music in, and that's often taken from the same pool. And that's why all the Marvel movies end up, when they are finally scored, they end up sounding so alike, because the director, while working on the film, falls in love with that placeholder music, and then he goes to the composer and tells him, I want it to sound like that. And since it's always the same placeholder music, all the movies end up sounding the same. And it was, we wanted to make that different. So since we did the storyboard, then we did the animatic, and then when we had the animatic, we had to lock all the shot lengths, so they were all locked to like 100 frames, 175 frames, 250 frames. They were all locked, and like, okay, we can't change the duration and the pacing anymore, because then we sent that off to Patrick and he starts composing for this exact timing to like 125th of a second. And then we have to animate on this timing. But sometimes, if you wouldn't have done this in the detail in the animatic afterwards, you end up with like, oh, this shot is way too short, or this shot is way too long. So that's why the animatic is so important.
Definitely. Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, it's getting the movement right, you know, for the people, you know, much less the mechs, you know, so important for kind of conveying that, because, you know, there's a lot of fan animations out there, and the ones that really kind of resonate are the ones that just kind of feel natural. They have that kind of good walk sequence, which I think you guys have really achieved there. And certainly with all the dynamicism with the hovercraft engaging and the differential in speed and kind of matching that up is, yeah, you know, it's got to be a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, it also helped since Constantine, his name is actually Constantine too. Since his style is like very comparable to Sir Dub Dub's style, I would say, like this comic-y movement with like and kapow and stuff, and we end up being a little bit too locked into our we are a robot mechanical walking, and I think a good mix is a good call for BattleTech, because these are like walking tanks and walking machines. But a little bit of this Japanese Gundam movement is quite all right, and finding a balance in between is like the perfect spot, I guess.
Definitely,
and from my point of view, it's also there's a visual difference from a rookie pilot to master pilot, like it was described in some novels as well,
right?
Like Morgan Kell in his Archer. Even moving without his electronics and disappearing from the radar. So I envision that these guys move totally different and in a more human style than just robots. So, yeah, I lean a little bit more towards a more dynamic movement and not too static and robotic.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on the same page. That's why, you know, I love Bruins' work. You know, I love the little bit more Gundam, you know, with a little bit more based in reality. You know, but certainly for you guys kind of drawing from the MechWarrior 2 models and universe, kind of getting a little, you know, that the weight, you know, I guess of the machines. And I think that's kind of apparent, but there's still dynamism is good. Certainly the locust sprint from the first one. And then, you know, now we have the hovercrafts kind of moving and interacting with the mechs, which is great as well. You know, last time the locusts were just running, nothing was shooting back at these guys. And so it's good to kind of get that interaction. Talk to me a little bit about each of those mechs. I know, you know, kind of, you know, off the recording, Constantine, you had been talking about kind of each of these mechs has their own little quirks, you know, so kind of what went into kind of, you know, adding that to it and kind of incorporating that now into the story, into the action.
So, actually with some of these decisions that I've made early on, because like the mech models and the mech texturing that dates back to early 2020 by now, actually. So that's when I was still completely alone on the project and hadn't really like talked too much about it with other people. So some of these early decisions have like been kind of carried through the project now that we've grown and grown, and episode 3 will be even more sophisticated. And like you said, last time, nobody was shooting back at those guys. And I mean, that had a reason, because it was just easier for us to animate. So we can keep on adding up stuff. I mean, it's no secret that, I am even just the only artist by profession, but even I only started like 4 years ago, so I'm still definitely learning, and all the other guys they do this as their hobby, so we definitely still are in the middle of a learning curve. And I guess it shows with episode 2, and it will show with the next one, and it will get progressively better. But talking about these mech quirks, they are in the project now, and I decided for them when I first set up the mech texturing, and I just kind of tried to give each of the pilots, because this was before the mechs even had pilots, I kind of separated the human element from them completely, so I tried to see the mechs as their each character individually. And then we kind of added in the human pilot into the mech that fits to the chassis. So the Hunchback is obviously this brawly, close quarter combat equipped war machine, basically, with these claws and all the reactive armor and the anti-missile system. So he's kind of the brawler, I guess, like with the two machine guns and the AC-10. It's also not for ranged combat. And then we kind of wrote the character fitting to the mech. So the pilot of the Hunchback is obviously this explosive personality who rushes forward, even disregards orders in some form, and picks up fights with the others. Then obviously we have the catapult. Equus 2, who's like, since he's in this like long range combat mech with all the red radar equipment and the smoke screen, it's like, it's not really a defensive mech, but it's also definitely not an offensive weapon. It's more like artillery, like in the back of the field. That leads me to Equus 3, the rifleman with like the ultra autocannon and the Gauss rifle. It's basically a sniper. And then he has these big anti-aircraft lights on the shoulders. So should evening break in, which is really close to happening by the end of episode 2, he can basically illuminate the whole battlefield and do the classic rifleman move of just looking into the air and then firing upwards.
Right.
And then obviously we have the Lance Lead Equus 1, because you gotta have a Lance Lead.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned the catapult with the chaff and not the chaff, the smoke screen, which I thought was a great shot there, you know, kind of laying out that smoke screen with everybody. And so, and then, you know, certainly throwing in the chaff, you know, was an added bonus there, you know, to kind of for that missile deterrent. But, you know, what I know when I talked to Bruins about free heads, you know, he spoke in length about just how difficult it is to get good shot, good smoke rendered, you know, in the graphic suites that you guys are working with. You know, what went behind that shot and trying to kind of get that realized?
It's kind of a can of worms, the whole FX pipeline. In episode 2, we employed stuff that was directly simulated and rendered in Blender. We included stuff that was simulated in another software and then rendered in Blender. We had stuff that was simulated in another software and then was loaded into a third software and rendered there. Mm-hmm. Then we had stuff that was done in 2D in After Effects, like from like real recordings and to like action battle packs and stuff. Then I did stuff in Nuke. And especially for shot 108, which is the tank being hit and like cooking off in close-up, I think it was like by the end, it was like 7 different render passes, like particles and ground smoke and ground particles and the jet flame and another flame and then the large scale smoke. Because in CG, it's often easier to simulate all of these things by themselves and then just add them into the 3D scene. Yeah. Because if I want a large scale fire, the fire may look good, but then the smoke plume maybe doesn't. Or like it behaves widely different. And since these are all simulations where you work with physical parameters, it's very hard to art direct them to your liking. And I actually, I got this up here on my screen. Maybe I can share it with you because you were talking about the smoke grenades. So let me see if this works. Can you see it?
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah. So this is my my second screen with the Houdini setup. So Houdini is basically this industry standard FX tool where all the Marvel stuff and the Hollywood stuff is being done in. And we are lucky enough to be able to afford a license because of all the patron support. So I want to highlight that again. And what I basically did here is we internally discussed the look of it a little bit, and we knew we wanted to have this in because obviously the catapult is equipped for that. So then we looked at lots of details and references from like real tank exercises where they fire all the 40mm smoke canisters. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to get the look right. So what happens is I set up this simulation and I use all these parameters. And in this case, it's like it's a small scale particle simulation that does these outward spikes. Mm-hmm. And then this is being taken into a smoke simulation, and you use these particles as references for velocity, and that creates these nice spikes here. And if I let the sim for a few seconds, so you can see this is really intense. This is like one frame takes a few seconds, and you can see these nice little wiggle lines that kind of come out here. Mm-hmm. And when this is done simulating, the velocity dissipates, and then the smoke kind of starts dissipating into air. And the cool thing with these effects is that they are all three-dimensional. So what you end up getting is these smoke caches, and each of this cache is being being the detail is in voxels. So you're not talking about pixels here, you're talking about voxels, which is basically three-dimensional pixels. Mm-hmm. So you can see the blockiness here. And I end up writing these caches frame by frame on my hard drive. They can be up to several gigabytes large. And for the smoke shot, I just did 8 different simulations with different seats for the simulation. So all the particles kind of flew in slightly different directions, and that ended up making the simulation look very different. And then I take all these caches and assemble them back in my Blender file, and I render that as a separate render pass. And then I go into my compositing program and overlay that as a different image and mix that together. So yeah, it's it's quite a process.
Definitely. And so of all the vehicle assets that you're doing, what kind of stood out? You know, I know we have the hovercrafts. I don't think we're in the previous version. Did we get a tank last time, or am I just remembering because you were sharing tank assets on social media?
We actually showed them from above, but in a low res version. Okay. We didn't bother creating these close up texturings for them last time because it was just seen from like 500 meters above. Yeah.
Gotcha. And Christian, how many different tank assets were there in this between the regular tanks and the hovercraft?
Well, do you have the two hovercrafts with different turrets each?
Right. Okay.
One with the autocannon and the other with the missiles. And you have the heavy tank. It's, I think he gets his shots in the next episode. Right. You will see him moving. Then there's the transport. Nothing much to say about it. And the APC. The APC was new in the base. This was a completely new vehicle for this episode.
And are you designing the inside of those vehicles as well for when we get the character shots, or are you just doing the outside design work?
Mainly the outside.
Gotcha. So Bernard, when you're getting the characters in each of these units or kind of interacting with those units, to what degree are you kind of doing the animation, and how does that tie back into, I guess, the full scene? You know, is that kind of a back and forth between you and Constantine to get all that movement right?
The animation for the infantry in the base was a mix of motion capture data that I got from Mixamo, which is like a web page where you can download different kinds of animations as motion capture data, or you upload your character and then the motion gets attached to your character and you can download the animation again.
Yeah.
But of course, pre-made animation can never be so precise for your project. So there was a lot of hand animation as well, or tweaking the motion capture data to fit what we needed. And so that was, partly helped to have motion capture data, but there was a lot of manual animation stuff to do still. So that helped a lot for run cycles or guys running. It was mostly motion capture. But the guy jumping on the hover tank was hand animated, or the other guy running towards the APC and getting in was all done by hand.
Gotcha.
And then basically I render out a rough animation pass, show it to the guys, and then getting feedback and see what needs improvement. And then perhaps there's 2-3 more passes until the animation is called final.
So how often are you kind of running around and jumping on things in your apartment with the camera running for some reference? We got some bloopers that are going to be in a video there. Bernard animating things out.
No, not so much for the running and jumping, but for the shot with the pirate captain and the spotter in the base, I was basically acting that out, looking probably pretty silly.
awesome.
But... I was recording myself acting the thing out, like repeating the voice lines like 10 times so I get the timing right as well. Mm-hmm. And then taking that as a reference for animating that by hand again. And the facial animation was actually, again, motion capture. Mm-hmm. So we came up with kind of a pipeline with an iPhone app doing facial recognition. Okay. Constantine was taking over that because he has an iPhone. I don't know which version you need for that to work, but mm-hmm. he was the only one who had that phone with the capability. So he took the voiceover lines that we got early on in the project or in for episode 2, and acting again, trying to match the pace and each word the voice actors were doing, and then handing over the animation data to me again, and I was integrating that into the shot.
Gotcha. So the voice acting is early. That happens early in the process, not later.
It happened quite early this time. From the experience we had with episode 1, it came in quite late, and we figured out that we had to redo or change the animation quite a bit because I was doing rough animation already, but it didn't match the voice lines or the voice acting. So
yeah.
It was my wish to have this early in the process so we don't have to redo stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, do you have the full series sketched out in terms of how many episodes and what's going to be in each episode? Or are you guys just kind of building on each with a very rough outline? I guess how much detail is in there and how much are you flying by the seat of your pants?
That's a good question.
I don't want spoilers too. If you want to say no spoilers tag, then
it's a hard question. We have obviously talked about this, and there are ideas to extend this and keep extending this and stuff. But the question is basically how much can we do? How much are we maybe allowed to do? And how long do you want to stick to the same setting so far it's very dynamic. We always have the next 2 episodes kind of pretty much roughed out in terms of what happens there. But there's not like this Marvel Cinematic Universe planned for that's just maybe next year. I don't know. Maybe if we get so many new people coming in and helping us, that we can keep churning out these episodes faster and not take another 11 months for the next one. That would be the answer.
Yeah, even just closing this mission out, you know, that's a good first step, and then you can worry about mission number 2, I guess. We talked a little bit about resources. I want to make sure kind of people listening, you know, have a kind of clear idea of ways they can help. You know, we've mentioned your Patreon a couple of times, which is TMCDE on patreon.com. And so you guys, you know, can kind of head on over there. Are there specific needs? I know, you know, when I chatted with Bruin and, you know, we weren't even talking about Patreon necessarily at the time or getting him support, but he mentioned a need for a particular software, and we were able to kind of rally the support of, you know, very very enthusiastic community to kind of do that. Are there specific things that you guys need and you're trying to do to kind of help streamline the process for those out there that, you know, want to kind of support what you're doing and, you know, would like to reduce the amount of time between episodes for them to enjoy?
Yeah, so we actually, we got so many emails regarding modeling help. Mm-hmm. And kind of the problem is that we already have 2 very talented modelers that often are done way before we are even able to use their assets. So we have multiple multiple assets laying around that have been finished now for over a year that we want to use, but we didn't even get to use them yet. And like Christian said, when we need a new vehicle, he's usually done with it in weeks, and that and then these guys are just idling around, or obviously not idling, they're doing other stuff, but regarding the project, I think what takes us like more than 95% of the work is just setting up scenes, animating stuff, getting stuff rendered, babysitting scenes that don't work. So basically, we just need people who can work with Blender. So the chance is quite good to get people in there, because Blender is obviously the most commonly used 3D program by now, since it's free and open source, and everybody can basically learn it within a few weeks if he really wants. And then we can use help with animation. Animation is a big thing. Maybe somebody has one of these motion capture suits laying around. That would be awesome. And we could use help with FX. So all the explosion smoke stuff, I do it right now, but I'm kind of faking my way through, because I don't have a real training there. I'm just doing what seems to be right for me. And my only training consists of a few YouTube courses. So we had this awesome help from Diamond, from Canada. He's this FXTD by trade. He works on this big budget Hollywood stuff, but he was just able to cut a few hours out of his very busy schedule. So shout out to him. I think he's having a second kid right now, so that takes up his time. So that's basically Blender and FX, and just shoot us a message, I'm sure we can use your talents.
Yeah, and particularly animation is many call it the king's discipline. I don't want to sound like I'm doing that, but it's the most laborious work to animate stuff and make it look good and natural. Yeah. And that takes up a lot of time, and not many people, or let's put it this way, the first thing people learn when they're starting with 3D is obviously modeling. Mm. So for that reason, we have many applicants for that, and animation, that would really be great to have some help here. Especially also since Andreas had less and less time to work on the project. He was doing animation as well. Thankfully, he did still walk cycles for the Thunderbolt. But yeah, the last months I was pretty much on my own doing animation.
Yeah, I mean, he had the same problem with like kit number one coming in, and then kit number two coming in, and then the whole Corona stuff. Since he works in the food business, that's obviously hit very, very hard here in Germany. So animation, yeah.
Now, kind of going back to the episode, you know, what kind of shots stood out to each of you guys as favorites, you know, for this? And, you know, certainly, you know, between episode one, you know, for me, that locust, you know, escaping, getting hit was certainly my favorite shot kind of going through. And even that opening drone shot was a really good one. You know, what kind of stood out for you guys? What do you guys enjoy the most in creating for this episode for us?
Can I go first?
Sure.
I think for me, it actually was maybe that's just me talking from a production standpoint, but I actually enjoyed the radio room sequences a lot, because they just ended up looking so cool. I had pushed away this radio room for a long time during production, and we were doing a lot of other stuff, and then someday I just sat down and said, like, okay, I want to build this radio room now. And then I did one of these infamous 10-hour straight sessions where I didn't stand up once, and in the end I sent the guys this almost finished radio room that I just managed to assemble in like basically this one sleepless night, and it kind of worked. I mean, we had a few touch-ups. Bernard added this great light coming through these blinds, and then the motion capturing really worked out with Dave's character, and then obviously the voice lines from Phil. So I really like that. That was a great example of what we are capable of doing now with like our skill set. I was pretty proud of that. Yeah.
Excellent. What about you, Bernard? What's your favorite part of this one?
Last time I had difficulties to pick a shot, but this time it's clearly the sequence with the Jeff launch and the final showdown. I was very happy how that turned out, also in in terms of pacing, because I was a little bit concerned, like from other movies, with action shots, sometimes you think like, I mean, this guy should already be there, or he's too late, or there's a mismatch, but this really got goosebumps when I watched it in the final production shot, having seen it, I don't know, 50 times already. That's my favorite shot.
So what are the tabletop sequences and rules that go into Hunchback punching a hovercraft as it drives by? I want to, how many 12s do I have to roll to get that to happen? I love it.
Christian, you are the tabletop expert. You're still muted, by the way.
I think it's not possible that a hunchback can punch a mech unless the claws is a melee weapon. With a melee weapon, it should be possible. But the roll would be quite high because that's a really fast hoover, so a skilled pilot, brawler.
You got it. Yeah, if you drive right at something, then you tend to get punched sometimes, apparently. I'm pretty sure developers have said almost anything is possible in Battletech if you can kind of read into the rules. And given when I did the roundtable with Blaine, I seem to remember him saying we were kind of joking about the spider doing somersaults in one of the MechWarrior Dark Age novels. And he was like, I talked to Randall, and Randall said, there's a combination. I can make it happen with the rules. So if a spider can do somersaults, according to Randall Bills, then I'm sure a hunchback can kind of punch a hovercraft that's driving straight at it. But, you know, it made me chuckle. It looked great. You know, it certainly looked realistic. There's nothing that like what just happened there. But yeah, I love it. And you got the claws, the Yinlo Wang like claws. Was that your inspiration for the hunchback, Constantine? You know, or did you come up with that on your own?
Honestly, thinking back, I think the claws, I had seen them somewhere when I was, because I worked on the hunchback last, and he kind of the most customization went into the hunchback because he has all these armor plates, and he has armor plates on the back, and he basically looks like a Russian tank from the front. And then he has other stuff on it, of course, the big Chef launcher. And I think I saw the claws in some other concept art, because we always have lots of references, like everything's a remix, obviously. And then I had one of these Kitbash sets that I used to take like raw models from, that we then remodeled. And they had these nice claws, so I just fitted them on, and they work perfectly with the fist, like kind of this way. And then it just became the melee weapon of the hunchback.
And you know, for the shot, you know, one of the shots that stood out was kind of walking through the forest and kind of, you know, seeing, you know, tree fall down every once in a while. I thought that was a really good shot. I think you had mentioned before about trying to kind of build that environment in the tree assets and just the foliage in general. You know, when you know, for that, bringing that in, you know, is there a scale in terms of, you know, distance, you know, size of the planet that we're working on, you know, what they're walking through in order to get there? You know, I know when I was watching, it seemed like they were approaching the base, I guess, from the mountainside, and maybe the commander saw them through the binoculars as movement in the trees, if not necessarily the mechs, and then the hovercrafts engaged kind of as they came out of that forest. Is that, you know, am I reading that right? Was I in terms of scale and kind of where everything is happening in that scene?
Yeah, so when we produced episode one, like I said, it's a result of being on the learning curve, not necessarily as a individual, but as a team that only works remotely, because even though we are all located in Germany, I have not seen any of these guys in real life yet. So there has been some hand wavium in order to make the forest a little bit larger than it was last time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it just wouldn't work out. But after that, we actually I think Bernard works with these motion paths where he puts the mechs on them and they walk like in real time. And then we actually use this distance covered to set up the shots. So the whole end sequence was actually working. Like the hovercraft was approaching with a certain speed and then they matched up at the correct time. So there was no like fake jumping around in the scenery. We have this arena that we built just for that. That was a reason.
Well, that's a great detail. Well, I love that.
Well, to be honest, we had to cheat here and there in terms of distances, but to a degree where I think no one would notice. I mean, in terms of pace and action that's going on, I think nobody will get a measure tape and trying to reconstruct where everyone is at each time. So you can get away with a lot, but more or less, we had the distances in place.
Yeah, I definitely didn't pick up on it myself as well when I was watching it. So Christian, we got these guys' favorite scenes. What kind of stood out to you? What was your kind of most, kid in a candy shop type of moment there?
Okay, obviously I'm biased. It has to be something with the vehicles.
Yep.
Actually, it's the start of the spike. The heavy tank when he launches, when he starts to accelerate, this moment when he is standing and then this the full suspension working and then it starts to drive and you get this beautiful shot of the rear. Need to talk. Actually, this tank was almost done when I did it the first time, and then I was in the tank museum in Munster, and then there was the 60, and I moved around, take shots, and then I stood right before the back of the M60 and thought, oh, that looks nice. And then I get back to Blender. Back to Blender and redid the tank completely with an M60 rear.
Excellent. Well, it paid off. They look great in the shots. Any background, kind of off-screen background you guys can give us in terms of the units, kind of history of the pirates or history of, Equus that might not be spoiler, but might kind of flesh out the story a little?
Yeah, so we actually have this let me dig that up. We have this lore and fluff document on our production cloud that I can use to not maneuver myself into a problematic lore break here. So we actually
you guys have a planet picked out, is there a location that
the planet is Iron Land. We picked it. I guess I mentioned it when we chatted with what's his name, sorry,
Sam.
On Thursday we picked a planet that has an interesting enough lore and that is not completely made up by us. So it was in one of the source books, but nothing really major has happened there yet. So we can't step on any toes because, some people take it very seriously. I don't want to get into that argument. So we picked Iron Land since it's a interesting enough planet with like special pine trees that grow in the desert, and you have this nice contrast between the very red sands because there's lots of iron oxide, hence the name Iron Land. But our unit is called the First Cuirassiers, and the unofficial name is Prime Cuirassiers. They are a mercenary unit, and they originate from Portus Prime, the former Rimworlds Republic, and they are affiliated with House Steiner, and it's not a house unit, but it's a mercenary unit affiliated to House Steiner, and that basically maybe explains some of the mannerisms, some of the very good equipment that these guys have, and also why the combat is so intense. And then regarding the pirates, they also originate from the former Rimworlds Republic, and their old unit name was Ameris Dragoons. So they actually originate from there. They are descendants of the long-fallen Rimworlds Republic, And I guess we spilled the beans in episode one. So they are raiding this old SLDF weapons depot, and that it's like the Pandora's box. They could find everything in there, from like crazy lost tech weapons to basically new mechs and other stuff. So that's why they are there, and they are so strong. Some people have already commented that this is a unusually strong pirate faction.
Excellent. Love it. Love the history, love the backstory. You know, looking forward to kind of what's coming up here. And so what's best guess, what's our timeline? What are we waiting for episode 3? We got to have goals. 11 months,
Bernard,
6 months.
Say something.
Oh, boy. Well, the goal is definitely less than 11 months, yeah. I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And what was it between the pilot and episode 1 again?
The pilot and episode 1 was, yeah, was 6 months.
Six, okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I can say that much, that we are planning episode 3 to be more well planned in terms of production. We are trying to avoid these huge time eaters that we had in episode 2, because we were trying to get so many things into it at the same time, and the production itself wasn't a problem, but the technical difficulties of working with two different Blender versions and two different render engines, and then I completely redid the whole compositing process. In the meantime, we moved from Blender Compositor to Nuke. So that was just like massive time sinks that I've sometimes, Bernard had spent like almost a week on just fixing shots because they were getting broken for no reason. Blender is not a perfect program. Since it's open source, it has some little quirks, and some of them are only visible when you really punish the program, like we do with like really big assets and linking from other assets and dynamic updates from other stuff. And it's a bit hard to explain without getting too technical, but technical difficulties were definitely like at least as big of a time sink than the actual production was.
I think I find it fascinating and certainly impressive what you guys are able to do, kind of, you know, some in a lot of ways as hobbyists, you know, and certainly in the spare time. And, you know, there's always going to be people out there that have no concept of what goes into the thing that they're watching, that are just kind of like, why aren't you pumping out an episode every week? And
definitely,
but yeah. I think for those out here that, you know, understand and appreciate what goes behind, and certainly those of us that kind of, you know, can step forward and support that work. And
yeah.
You know, in one way, they're, you know, through publicity or Patreon, will understand that. So take a time, you know, give people a little tease. You know, you guys do great, you know, with your Patreon, by the way, and kind of sending out updates, you know. And so, you know, as one who kind of like tries to kind of, you know, stay under the radar, stay quiet until I have something to share, you know, I appreciate kind of, you know, the time it takes for you guys to kind of update. And you know, I know for like the gallery, I'm constantly kind of thinking and trying to track down or recruit concept artists for Gallery 3025, and it's been silent for a long time because I've got a bunch of professional, very, very good concept artists who are interested and just trying to dig out a day from their schedule to do it, you know. For those that are on that particular Patreon, know that hasn't been forgotten. There's some cool stuff in the works, but so you guys do a good job keeping it updated. We appreciate it, so that is TMCDE on Patreon. You know, connect with these guys on Twitter constantly, you know, throw out all your handles of what you're on the various social media so people can follow there.
Catching me off guard there. So my personal Twitter profile, which I kind of use for the TMC communication, is C4K96. We can link that in the description, I guess.
Definitely.
And then we also have the handle Hired Steel. We were lucky enough to capture that. And then we also have the handle of TMC. Yeah. I think it's Top Game C, actually. Let me see. TopGameC,
yeah, I'll put all these into the description for those watching the video on YouTube, you know, where you can find everyone on social media and kind of get those updates. But
good call.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to it. Christian, you've brought some great vehicle assets. We appreciate kind of that skill. And for all those that didn't make it for the conversation, you know, thank you, you know, from the fan base. We appreciate your work, and we're definitely looking forward to the next one. But that's it. So thanks, guys, for listening. Thanks to the TMC crew for producing this episode for us. And we'll catch you on the next podcast.
Thank you for having us.